Why don't you take it, Marilyn?
Yeah. Welcome, everyone, on BBS. What else does Heist usually say? We're live simulcast.
We're live. We're
waiting for
people.
Win.
Yeah, waiting for when. People are coming through still on the conference line via telephone. And hang in there. Welcome to all of them.
You may be wondering where Heist is tonight. He's home sick with the flu.
Oh, no. Well, I'm having my dinner, so...
That's what that noise was.
That was good.
No, I don't hear anything.
Ding dong.
Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, we got a caller. Welcome, caller.
If you'd like to, say your name and your city. If you want to.
Michael, I did. Reno, California.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
We're waiting for Wynn. Heist is out sick with the flu. Welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and city. Did I speak out of turn? I thought I heard a ding.
No, that was Marilyn.
No, it's not.
Well, aren't you the only ding-dong on the air?
Welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and city.
Hi, Cleo from Connecticut.
Hi, Cleo.
How you doing?
Pretty good. We're all here except Heist.
Okay. Who am I speaking with?
This is Susan. Susan in Delaware.
Okay, great.
Susan, that rushes all the time.
Pardon? Welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and city.
Hi, I got disconnected. It's Wanda again from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Hi, Wanda. Welcome back.
Hello.
This is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Don.
Hi. Hey, Don.
Hello.
Welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and location.
This is George Pearson, Sedona.
Welcome, George.
Hey, Lone Wolf.
Ah, oh, how are you?
I'm doing real good. I got something for you special. It'll show up someday.
Cool.
Hey, Dwayne, I have to phone you back. I get back to you about that thing we were talking about the other day.
Oh, you mean the battery? Did you get the email about the batteries?
Yeah, I got your email.
Okay.
I'll get back to you. I want a few
Welcome.
Of them.
If you'd like to, please say your name and location.
This is Uncle Terry from Phoenix.
Hi, Uncle Terry. This
Hi,
is Dave. Susan. We're all here except Heist. Heist is out
hey,
there with the Terry.
Hi, Uncle Terry.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome. If you'd
Hi,
like
you
to, please say your name and city.
Percy, North Carolina.
Hey, Percy.
Somebody's enjoying a snack.
Welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and location. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and location.
Brian from Ventura.
Who is that?
Brian from Ventura.
Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, Wynn. Nice of you to join us.
Hello. I was playing.
Hello.
Hello.
If you'd like to, please say your name and location. You got the console. We don't have it.
Sedona Jim. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Hello.
A couple of more.
Hello, everybody. You all sound so excited tonight.
Is Carrie Brown with us tonight?
I heard her giggle.
If you have a chance, please say your name and city.
Jim.
Yeah. You know what?
Sedona.
Who's that?
Keep it.
Terry Brown from Sedona.
Oh, hi, Terry.
Hi, Susan.
Welcome. If you'd like to, Please say your name and location.
Hi, Celeste.
Matthew, Orange County, California.
I heard Celeste and George.
Sit down.
Yes, thank you.
Everybody in Sedona seemed to have come in at one time. We have Lone Wolf.
We're clickish, you know what I mean?
Welcome, if you'd like to, please say your name and location.
Jim in Las Vegas.
Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Dan from Wisconsin.
Hi, Dan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello. Welcome. If you'd like to say your name and location, please do so.
Hello. This is Lisa from San Diego.
Hi, Lisa. Did you say Elisa or Lisa?
Lisa. L-I-S-A.
There.
Welcome.
All right, we're gonna start in just a minute.
Well, we're all here, BBS, Uncle Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Hello.
And did I mention Lone Wolf?
I am here.
Well,
Dwayne?
You know,
welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and location. You got control, Wayne. I don't have any control if you'd like to shut off the dings or whatever.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Lone Wolf is going to change his name from Lone Wolf to Group Wolf.
Lone Wolf what?
Group. The opposite of lone.
Lone Wolf to Group Wolf.
How about One Wolf? That works for me also.
Too much like lone.
If you do one wolf, you cover them both, right?
Yeah, I'm hip. I'm there.
Hang on.
How about just plain old wolf? That works also.
Hey, Lone Wolf. How you doing?
Hey, Wolf.
There you
Blitzer,
go.
Is a
welcome. If you'd like to, please say your name and location.
Jim Skelton, Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Jim. Hey, I'm just curious. How many of you are on that got my email and were curious?
Yeah, I've got my email.
Yeah, me too.
Right. Okay, great. How many of you identify with Egypt?
Oh, yeah,
I do.
I do.
Yeah. Ever since I was a kid. Maybe that's why I'm in Memphis. Not in Memphis, Egypt.
Memphis, Egypt. Thank you, Chris. Let's see. Chris always shows up as Barbara. Okay?
Yes, I'm changing that. Okay, I'm changing identities, man. I don't want that out yet.
All right. He's a cross phone caller. Here we go.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. This conference is being recorded.
Okay, this is August 18th, 2014. And this is our Monday night call, and we're broadcast on both the internet and also on the phone line. And for those of you that checked in on the phone line, because we have some new people, be sure and check your phone bill to make sure you're not being charged. If you are, it won't be a lot. But some people get really addicted to our calls, and you should know, because there is the option to check in on Skype, and there's also the option to listen on the internet. But the cool thing about being on this line is sometimes we have, you know, chances for people to contribute and to participate, and you can't do that very easily on the internet. You can, actually. You can call BBS. And in some calls, we have a lot of participation, and in a lot other calls, we don't have any. And We have three calls a week. They are all different. And people that get what we're doing and that it resonates with really keep coming back. These calls are, I would say, they're probably not like nothing you've ever experienced. And there's something that happens on the call that, if I can say it in words, but until you experience it, it won't be real. But if I said it in words, we have this long-term connection with this group soul that identifies itself as the Elohim. And I always tell people to be skeptical, to just because they say there's something, you shouldn't believe anything just because somebody says it. And channeling is a very approximate thing, because as I've learned, there's negative sources in other dimensions that can speak through people, and they can often identify themselves as something positive. So if you're listening to a channeling and somebody says, this is Jesus, that does not mean that it's Jesus. It could, but it may not. And it may be a negative source trying to use a name like that to, how can I say it, take power over people. And, you know, the fact is, we've been talking to a source that says it's the Elohim. And historically, Elohim is one of the names for God in the Old Testament. It's one of the names of God for the Mormons. And we've had so many conversations with them. And I would say for at least 3 years, I was checking it out and saying, does this resonate? Can I validate that they actually are who they say they are? And they give a totally different explanation for the idea of God as would be normally connected to through our conditioned reality systems, the way religion would talk about God. But you can still use that word, and you can still think of it in the conventional way, and it still can work. It's just that the real story is far more sophisticated than that. And we have on our calls, on our Monday call, it's kind of a wild card. I pick a topic. Sometimes we do a session where we talk to them. Sometimes, we have really interesting people paying attention to our work. One of them has a belief that wrote a book about his memories of being with Jesus. Terry Friedman is on the line right now. And he believes he is the reincarnation of the apostle Matthew that was with Jesus. And he wrote a book that is like, wow, it feels like I'm there. And if you go to our website, intelligent-infinity.com, there's a link to the book. And you can get a PDF for not very much money. It is fascinating because it's not religious. It's like you feel like Jesus was a human. But who was Jesus? How does he? I mean, if we're talking to the Elohim and they say they're the name for God in the Old Testament, but when I asked them, do you guys really like to be worshipped? When I asked them outright, they said no. They said, we're just in another dimension. We're a group energy, and we can penetrate your dimension energetically in such a way that things can shift down here. It looks like miracles. But from their place, it's not a miracle. It's like we are in a very, dense, energetic space on this planet. And where they are, they're in a very undense energetic space. So it's kind of like if you had a filter and you had small enough particles being poured through the filter, the Elohim are like very small particles that can be poured through the filter. And they can make differences. And in our cosmology that I've learned, the whole universe is one energy. One energy that has subdivided umpteen trillion times. So whether you're a human, you are part of that energy, and whether you're the Elohim, you're part of that energy. So the way to look at it is that the Elohim is a higher aspect of ourselves. We're a lower aspect of them, and we are aspects of each other that have subdivided into bodies. And when somebody has that experience of actually being able to feel that, then you start to see everybody as part of yourself. And that's when this empathy comes in, because if somebody is part of you, then you can't help but feel empathetic for them. And even if they don't with you, you can with them. And it's why Jesus, and we're not a Christian group, you know, this all just came up in the mix, this connection and who Jesus was and what he was doing and how he connected with these higher sources. You know, it's just part of the flow of all the things that have happened. And if this all intrigues you, please, if you haven't read the book, the Creator God book, the Creator Gods, please read it, and it'll give you some idea of all the experiences I had to come to the conclusion that, hey, I think this might be real. And the deal is that there have been a lot of miracles that have happened for people that have been coming to these calls. Or instead of calling them miracles, we could call them interventions where the Elohim has gotten through the filter of all the dense stuff and caused something to shift. But oftentimes, in fact, usually, they don't take credit for it, because what they've learned is that miracles are not necessarily the best way to get people to pay attention, because people tend to give up their power when there's miracles, and they don't want us to give up our power. We are all evolving, we're all growing, and we're supposed to have power and feel empowered, and we're not supposed to give up our power for something outside of ourselves. And miracles tempt people to do that. And so, you know, you can look at Jesus and see what happened with what he did and how, you know, people, in spite of the fact that he said, these things I can do, you can do also, in spite of that fact, most people don't think of that. If somebody should announce, hey, I'm doing the same thing Jesus did, they'd probably get clobbered. Because people would think that they were demonic or whatever. And this is why everyone has to go through their own level of discernment, their own level of skepticism and scrutiny with the work we're doing. And decide yourself, hey, I think there's something there. And that's why we have all these people coming to our calls, because they have taken the time to do that discernment, okay? And you'll find that we don't let you down. I can say that just because of my experience. You know, a few years ago, I did not have a clue of how to work this or how to make it work. And it was scary because what are people going to expect of me if I say we're talking to the Elohim or the Ra group? The Ra group is the other group we're going to be talking about. And that my experience is, which I'm not going to go through explaining it, it's in my books, goes into great detail, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. It's there are two groups of souls that are positive, that are making, want to make positive contribution to us, to our realm. And they both operate differently. One of them has identified itself as the Ra group. And my first introduction to the Ra group was when I started studying David Wilcock's work, because the source that he was channeling was identifying itself as the Ra group. And I knew he was Edgar Cayce, but I never heard of the Ra group before. Well, of course, we've all heard the name Ra, one of the gods in Egypt. We'll be talking about that tonight. And the way this group's soul was identifying itself through Wilcock was that they were made up of graduates of this realm. They had gone through a series of lifetimes. And sometimes it's like 1,000 lifetimes. You keep coming back, and every time you come back, you forget everything, but you carry the matrix of your previous lifetime. What does that mean? It's like a computer that has lots of programs in it, which you could compare to your soul, and the keyboard and the monitor, which you could compare to your physical embodiment, and that when you die, the keyboard and monitor gets pulled out. You don't have any physical embodiment, but the computer is still carrying all the programs. And then you come back for another lifetime, and that the computer plugs into the new physical body. And most people have no memory of where they've been. But the programs are in the computer, and now you have to figure out how to access the programs. For example, when I was younger, I was, you know, really into electricity and engineering and physics, and then one day I went to somebody's house, and they had a guitar sitting there, and I picked it up, and I bought it from them for $25, and I started writing songs. Later on, I found out I was a troubadour in another life. And so when I picked up the guitar, it somehow, subconsciously, picked up my programming to be a musician and a songwriter, and I started doing that. And when I met David Wilcock and started studying his sessions, it triggered another program in my computer. This was, you know, that if I didn't meet him, it may never have been programmed, picked up the program. It's like you can meet somebody, you can have a relationship with a new woman or a friend, or, you know, you're walking down the street and you feel, I wonder what's going on in that store. And suddenly you start to connect with something that you had a past track with. And it triggers that program. Otherwise, you may never trigger the program, and you're just going with the programs you have triggered. And some programs are more advanced than others. And what's happening on our calls is we are triggering programs for people just because they're discovering us, and we're talking about this stuff, that are more advanced. And that they start to just, many of them, expand into higher potentials than they ever believed were possible. And that's how it worked. And it certainly happened for me. This has been one of the most amazing life adventures I could ever dream of. And for Terry Brown as well, because, you know, I would say prior to doing this, I was a misfit. Terry was a misfit. What am I doing here? Everything was boring. And it's like, I've done a lot of things this lifetime. And I, normally, you know, when you master something, you turn it into a career and that's it. And for me, all these things I've mastered never became careers. They became temporary ways to make money and get by. And there's a lot of people that have come into this realm from higher dimensions. They chose to volunteer to come here. And once they're here, they don't remember that. And the signs of that is that it's also boring. It's like, well, okay, I can make money, but I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. It's all boring. And it's like, until you hit something that you are really fulfilling your highest mission in, then life doesn't seem to have a purpose. And so some of you that are on this call for the first time that never came into any of our calls probably fit into that model. And what I've seen is those are the people that keep coming back to our calls that are totally fascinated, and it's like having epiphany reactions to this stuff, because we're bringing in information that I don't think has ever been in this realm before. And when it started, that was a little scary. How could you imagine having two women in a row tapping you on the shoulder, telling you those guys want to talk to you again? And this voice comes through that says they created the universe, and they're just answering questions. They did, you know, they predicted a newspaper headline in advance when I was testing them. They did a healing, a miraculous healing on my sister. And they're asking question after question about things that I didn't even think a human should be able to know. And one of the things that unfolded with me early on was a connection that I had with Egypt, where I did something like this previously. And so, in spite of the fact that I went through all these lifetimes where I never did anything like this, when I met DK, and I'm just, she doesn't like me to say her name, she was the woman that triggered all of this. When we had that trip from L.A. to Portland, she and I had a past life together. Now, how do you know you had a past life with someone? Just because I'm talking to these sources, they don't usually tell me. And they don't tell anyone, because a lot of times people just want to know who they were and they're curious. And I don't blame them. I'd be curious. But most often, it's not good to know. It's not in your best interest to know, particularly if you were somebody notable or famous. Your ego can get all hooked into it. You tell everybody you were that person. And so when I share this call, I'm going to mention that. But I am not mentioning it for any kind of special acknowledgement. And in fact, like most things like this, I'd say, don't believe it. Check it out. You know, do your study, do your homework, but consider the possibility. But I'll tell you how I got convinced. Let me go back to The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. In The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, which I was compelled to write, I had never written a book before. I discovered David Wilcock's website. I had studied Edgar Cayce. I was very interested in Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce passed my own test of being legitimate. He did too many readings, and he was too accurate. But there was always a mystery of how he did it. Now, initially, the same source that was speaking through Edgar Cayce, which was a mystery, was now speaking to me, or speaking to David in his channelings, and they said who they were. They said they were a group soul made of graduates. And they didn't say they were giving this great wisdom. They weren't saying worship us or look up to us. They were wise, and I knew they were wise. I could read their readings, and I could feel their level of perception into understanding the human condition. And one of the things about Edgar Cayce, in the Edgar Cayce readings, Edgar Cayce talked about his past life as an Egyptian priest called Ra-Ta, 10,000 B.C., approximately. And in the Edgar Cayce readings, Ra-Ta had built the pyramids by levitation. He had built healing temples. And at some point, they said that in the Edgar Cayce readings, that Ra-Ta left a legacy and became known as Ra, the sun god, which is, of course, how everyone remembers Egypt. Well, now, David Wilcock kept referring to what he called, was the law of one teachings or channelings. And there was a woman, there is a woman named Carla Ruckert, who channeled this supposedly, I say supposedly because you have to investigate it and resonate, the same Ra source, 1981 to 1983. It's called Ra, the Law of One, or Ra something. And she was very shy, very quiet, and she had a partner who was very smart, who was a PhD, and he would make up questions. And he would ask all these really deep questions about who this Ra group was, what they did. And David Wilcock had been very influenced by this group of sessions. But the Ra, as it was speaking through Carla Ruckert, now, remember, we're not talking about an individual. We're talking about a group energy that can formulate their thoughts and speak through someone. And it sounds like one voice, but it's really a compilation of many voices commiserating. How do they do this? They're in a dimension where time moves differently than here. So I can only imagine they can talk to each other. They can say, what are we going to say? They can formulate the words, and then they can download it to the person who's channeling. And they have lots of, in their realm, they have lots of time to formulate their answers. So Carla Ruckert was someone that I started studying because I was writing this book, and I was trying to figure it all out. And as I studied Carla Ruckert's material, they were saying, the Ra group, that they discovered a high priest in Egypt, 10,000 B.C. and they had an affinity with this high priest. And they were doing miracles of healing through this high priest, and they built the pyramids by levitation. When I discovered that, I fell off my chair, because it was exactly what was in the Edgar Cayce readings, except the Edgar Cayce readings never mentioned a group soul. And the Carla Ruckert readings never mentioned Edgar Cayce. But it was like I had discovered a cosmic footprint, because how many people talk about, a high priest in Egypt building the pyramids by levitation? And I got to know Carla at that time, and I wanted to make sure she didn't read that in the Edgar Cayce readings, and she didn't. And I knew she was telling the truth. And so there was something else in the Carla Ruckert readings that was not in the Edgar Cayce readings. And that was the priesthood of that time were very threatened by these miracles that were happening with Lata and the Ra group. And it would be as if somebody today would come on the planet and suddenly do all these miracles, and everyone was paying attention to them, whatever, and they were doing healings. It's like there are people that would be threatened by that, because in general, many of the spiritual movements on our planet have contracted to losing the essence of how they were started, and it's become a bunch of people that seem to have the secret key to God, and if you don't go to their church and if you don't give them money, you won't get the key. So this is not new. This has been going on for a long time. And whether it's religion, whether it's, in Egypt, I don't know if they would have called themselves religions, but the priests had their gods. There were many gods. They had negative sources. And that what the Ra group said through Carla Ruckert and David Wilk, through Carla Ruckert, was the priests took the intervention that the Ra group did that was so popular. The people, they're coming in doing healings. They even said they manifested light bodies that people could see. People are getting healings. There's a pyramid that's built itself by magic. And the priests couldn't compete with that. The priests were doing kind of their own magic, but it was manipulative magic. It was kind of, how would we say it? It was maybe even black magic. They were doing sacrifices. And I have the feeling, and my research has backed this up, that the gods that the priests were dealing with, because there were god forces, there were beings that were saying they were gods, and these are the same energies that the cabals, the negative groups on our planet that are controlling things, are connecting to. And it started, or it had a reemergence back in Egypt, because the priest then, after Rata died, adopted the name Ra. And they said they were dealing with the same Ra to try to keep the people addicted to them. But they used the name Amun-Ra as a description for the Ra God that they were bringing to the people. And Amun-Ra was not the group Sol Ra that we're referring to. It was the priest's name, the same name, so they could make the people think they were dealing with the same source. And through Carla Ruckert, the Ra group said that they were sorry they did that intervention with this Ra-Ta because it created more harm than it did good because of the way the priests used the name Ra to empower themselves. And they called their Ra Amun-Ra. Amun-Ra, I'm sure you've heard that. And for thousands of years, Amun-Ra was the chief god of Egypt. And until there was an Egyptian pharaoh who, out of the blue, suddenly announced that the worship of Amun-Ra was illegal. And suddenly, he put himself against all the whole priesthood that was against, that was, you know, promoting Amun-Ra. And even the names of the pharaohs had the name, the word Amun in it. There was Amenhotep the first, Amenhotep the second, Amenhotep the third, Amenhotep the fourth. And Amenhotep the fourth is the one that decided the Amun-Ra god was negative, and he changed his name. He changed his name to Akhenaten, Akhenaten. And he ruled against any worship of the lower gods. Now, he probably was not as diplomatic as he could have been, although they were doing sacrifices. They were doing, if you follow the hidden agenda of the negative sources today, you know they're really pretty bad. They do really horrible things. And they do rituals. They do occult ceremonies. And this pharaoh somehow figured out what was going on. And he outlawed it. And in the Carla Ruckert Ra channelings, in those channelings, it was Don Elkins, who was her asking the questions, asked the question, who has Ra been talking to throughout history? Where have they done interventions before? Because he was getting the idea that they've done a lot of stuff. And they said, well, we did some stuff in Peru, and we did this. And then they mentioned one person who they were talking to, and that was this Egyptian pharaoh, Akhenaten. That was in the Carla Ruckert readings. Well, I'm studying all this, and you know, I was writing the book before I met DK. I started writing the book in the year 2000, and I met DK in 2002. And by the way, Akhenaten's wife was more famous than Akhenaten. She was Nefertiti. And many of you have seen that picture, the beautiful bust of Nefertiti that they discovered a couple hundred years ago. It's in a museum in Germany. And, you know, there's cults that formed around Nefertiti. And so that was Nefertiti was Akhenaten's wife. So I'm reading all of this, and then I met DK in 2002. I'm writing the book for 2 years, and I meet DK And if you've looked at the little video on my website, you know the story where we were driving from L.A. to Portland. It was pouring rain. I did a prayer protection. And I said, does anybody want to talk to me? Like a joke. And she answered, and I thought she was kidding me. And then we got to Portland, and I said, let's try that again. And that's when I asked them, how come she can do this? And they said, she came from another dimension. She came here to bring these messages in, and this is really important. And then I said, how do I know she's not crazy or something? I said, can you guys predict a newspaper headline? And they did so. And then 4 months later, they did a miracle of healing, and I'm there talking to the Elohim, or they say they're the Elohim, and I keep saying to myself, this can't be real. I must be making a mistake. I'm writing this book. The book was already over the edge. I'm on this group's soul, the Ra group that's been, how would you say it, like one of the God forces on our planet for a long, long time, and now I'm talking to another group soul, and they're a group soul. They're not God. They're a group soul that never took bodies and that are in the beginning of the creation of the universe. And these are the ways they answer my question. And that originally there was what they call the one infinite creator that subdivided and created all these subsets of itself that were just spirit forms or energy forms. And they didn't think of themselves as God. They just were aware. They knew they existed. And there were millions of them. And there was no, persistence. There was no persistence. Everything was just in spirit. They could think it. They could feel it. They could somehow communicate with each other. But nothing endured. And they said, what if we can make endurance? And they were experimenting with frequencies. And they found that they could send two frequencies. They could create frequencies. Somehow, you know, if you ask me to explain this any further than this, I can't. But they could vibrate their energies to create frequencies. And where the frequencies of one would meet the frequencies of another and another, they would create beat frequencies, and there would be a point in time-space that didn't exist before. And that point became a point that began the physical universe. And so they would create points here, they create points there. They learned how to do this. They could spin out galaxies. And they didn't think of themselves as God. They were like looking at a fish tank and creating inside the fish tank and saying, wow, look what we just did. And, you know, we've done a lot of conference calls on this topic. And if it fascinates you, you got to go into our archives and do some research. How the Elohim created the universe was a topic of about 6 or 7 calls. Every so often, we do another call like that. And we talk to them live. And they tell us about DNA and this and that. But what happened was, before there was the creation of persistence, everything was energy, and all the awarenesses knew that they were part of each other and that they were part of the one infinite creator. They knew it. There was, but with the advent of physicality, there became possessions. And possessions caused people in the physical realm to separate from each other, to lose the direct awareness that they were part of the same energy. And this evolved and devolved. So there were groups of people in the physical that were trying to take power over other groups because they thought they would be more comfortable if they had slaves, if they had subservience. It's like if you're running a church and all you have to do is, you know, you get your bills paid, you get a salary, then it's important to keep the people in the church being lesser than you, thinking they need you, or they'll stop supporting you in that role. That's an example. Now, it doesn't mean it has to be that way. I'm sure there are people that are ministers that really care for their congregations and that are genuinely making a contribution. And, you know, it's on an individual case. So the priesthood of Egypt was part of that group that was using these powers to control other people, holding them down into subservience. The Ra group wasn't trying to hold people down. They were trying to evolve everyone to their maximum potential. And suddenly, whatever they did got taken over by the priesthood until this guy, Akhenaten, came along and made it all illegal to do any of that. Well, what happened was Akhenaten's wife essentially betrayed him and started aligning herself with the priesthood. And they were saying things, and you could see how this would be said. He is destroying the heritage of Egypt. We have thousands of years of worship here in Egypt, and he is, with one edict and one law, taking it away. And then he didn't seem to have much interest in being political. He wasn't actively running the army. He eventually moved the capital of Egypt 200 miles and made his own city. And people were worshiping there. You could go look him up. It's called Akhenaten, the heretic pharaoh, okay? And some people, in some of the things I studied about Akhenaten, he started the Essenes, and he was the precursor to the idea of one God. Moses came shortly after Akhenaten, and many people give Akhenaten credit for Moses. And, of course, Jesus came afterwards, and Akhenaten was considered the foundational person to be the cause of all these other things to happen. And now, when I met BK, and we were, I was getting answers to everything I asked. At one point, I asked the question, I know I exist in other dimensions. I know I have had many, many synchronicities in my life, which I always tried to figure out. I said, can you tell me how to better connect with the other dimensions that I know I exist in? And they said, write down your dreams, and you will make the connection. And so that night, I put a pad by my bed. I kept waking up and writing things on the pad, and it was like I was daydreaming. And I thought in the morning I was going to find dreams. And instead, I found messages, like somebody was talking to me. Now, keep in mind, I'm feeling like I'm going crazy. I got to be making a mistake here somewhere. I have a new personal relationship that's channeling a source that says they created the universe. I'm writing a book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, that's bringing through the messages of this group soul that's been acting as a God force for our planet for tens of thousands of years, and now I'm getting messages in my dreams. I said, I've got to be making this up. Something must be wrong. I kept trying to find something wrong. Well, the first group of messages was, you're supposed to be the front man. We're not doing this for entertainment. You have to look tall and thin. It's the insanity of passion that makes things happen in the real world. communication from another dimension, just like Casey. He slept to connect with this dimension. And so now I go back and we do a channeling session, and I said, who's talking to me in my dreams? And the answer was Akhenaten. All right? And then I asked, did I know Akhenaten? Was I alive then? And they said, you were his right-hand man. And I said, what was my name? And they said, Amenhotep. Never heard that word before. Well, I researched Amenhotep on Google, and I came up with Amenhotep. If you recall, Akhenaten's name was Amenhotep IV. And Amun had Amun Ra in it, the negative Ra. And why did Akhenaten have a right-hand man who called himself Amenhotep when he changed that name? And I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know the answer. But I started studying Akhenaten, and I saw that I looked at Nefertiti's picture, and I said, geez, that looks like DK. No, couldn't be. And I said, maybe Akhenaten's right-hand man was having an affair with his wife. I didn't know, trying to figure it out. Well, eventually, I figured it out. I don't usually say this out loud. I was that pharaoh. There was no other explanation. And that when I met her, it triggered all the new potentials I had that I didn't know were there. And I just studied and studied. I found books about it. I could not find anything that would lead me to another decision. And it started to explain why I am doing this. I mean, one of my evening readings, they said, you finally found a job you won't get tired of. And they're right. It's like I can't retire, though, even, because I know how important it is to bring this stuff. And what's been happening on our calls is these group souls have the ability to flow energy from where they are to where you are. And in so many of our calls, they do that, and people on the call can feel the energy. I want to take a moment. I'm just going to say, shut your eyes and be open and see if you can feel this peaceful feeling come in, and consider that it might be them. Well, what happens is on our calls, if you come into our Wednesday call, people submit questions to us, and we ask them live. Terry is on the call. Terry's listening here. We ask them live, and they answer live. On Sunday, we do a call where Carla Ruckert and I, who is the channel of all that raw material, have gotten into affinity with each other. She's on most of our Sunday calls. Terry Friedman is on our call. She's on listening right now, I think. And Terry Friedman is a guy that remembers his past life as Matthew. And you can go to manwhowalked.com and you can sign up there to get excerpts from his book and see if it resonates. Because Akhenaten was the precursor to Jesus. And that one of the things Akhenaten did, now this is not historical, this came up with a lot of people that were channeling different, that Akhenaten was taking enlightened beings in his city and sending them out into the caves to start a community, which became the Essenes, which 1,000 years later became the support group for Jesus when he came in, and that no one has said this but me. When I asked the question, I mean, Terry Friedman hasn't said this, Carla Ruckert hasn't said this, and this information didn't come through, and I started to feel the connection between Jesus and the Ra group. And Edgar Casey believed he was talking to the Christ. And I started, through the reincarnation of Edgar Casey, the Wilcock channeling, they said, we came to you in Christianity, but we don't speak in those terms anymore because of the way religion screwed it up. That's all they said. The rest was just their wisdom. Well, I got started to get the idea that the Ra group was involved somehow with Jesus. And when I asked the question, when Jesus said, Father, who did he hear? They said, as you would understand, this was through DK, they said, as you would understand it, it would have been the Ra group.